suddenly, climbed into my bed without even asking. Not that I minded. Chris followed, sitting closer to my feet, and Elise balanced on the edge, ever the lady. Chris quietly asked what I was sure they were all wondering. Did he hurt you? No. Then I realized that wasn't entirely true. He didn't hit me or anything. He just pulled me away a little too roughly. What did he say? Elise fiddled with a piece of her dress as she spoke. He's not happy with my outburst. If it was the king choosing, I'd be long gone by now. Celeste touched my arm. But he's not. Maxon's fond of you, and so are the people. I don't know if that's enough. For any of us, I added in my head. Sorry I yelled at you, Elise said quietly. It's frustrating. I try so hard to keep cool and confident, but I feel like nothing I do matters. You all outshine me. That's not true, Chris argued. At this point, we all mean something to Maxon. We wouldn't be here otherwise. He's afraid to get to the final three, Elise countered. He's supposed to choose within, what, 4 days when it's down to three? He's holding on to me to keep from making that decision. Who's to say he's not holding on to me? Celeste suggested. Listen, I said. After today, I'll probably be going home next. It was bound to happen sooner or later. I'm just not cut out for this. Chris giggled. None of us is an Amberley, are we? I like shocking people too much, Celeste said with a smile. And I'd rather hide than do half the things she has to. Elise ducked her head. I'm too wild. I shrugged my shoulders, embracing my faults. I'll never have her confidence, Chris mourned. So there, we're all messed up. But Maxon has to pick one of us, so there's no point worrying anymore. Celeste toyed with the blanket. But I think we can all agree that any of you would be a better choice than me. After a heavy silence, Chris spoke up. What do you mean? Celeste looked across at her. You know, everyone does. She took a deep breath and continued. I've kind of already had this discussion with America, and I broke down to my maids the other day, but I've never actually apologized to you two. Chris and Elise looked at each other briefly before focusing again on Celeste. Chris, I ruined your birthday party, she blurted. You were the only one who's been able to celebrate in the palace, and I took that moment from you. I'm so sorry. Chris shrugged. It turned out okay in the end. Maxon and I had a great talk because of you. I forgave you a long time ago. Celeste actually looked like she might cry, but she pushed her lips together into a tight smile. That's generous, considering I'm having a hard time forgiving myself. Celeste dabbed at her lashes. I just didn't know how to hold his attention, so I stole it from you. Chris took a deep breath. It felt awful at the time, but it really is all right. I'm fine. At least it wasn't like with Anna. Celeste rolled her eyes shamefully. Don't even get me started. Sometimes I wonder how far she would have made it if I hadn't. She shook her head before moving her gaze to Elise. I don't know how you could ever excuse all the things I've done to you. Even the ones you don't know were me. Elise, ever poised, didn't explode like I might have in her place. You mean the glass in my shoes? The ruined gowns hanging in my closet? The bleach in my shampoo? Bleach? I gasped, finding confirmation in Celeste's tired face. Elise nodded. I missed a morning in the women's room so my maids could dye it back. She turned from me to Celeste. I knew it was you, she confessed calmly. Celeste hung her head, absolutely mortified. You didn't speak. You barely did anything. In my eyes, you were the easiest target, and I was shocked you never broke. I would never dishonor my family by quitting, Elise said. I loved her conviction, even if I didn't completely understand it. They should be proud of everything you've endured. If my parents had any idea how low I've sunk, I don't know what they'd say. If Maxon's parents knew, I'm sure they'd have kicked me out by now. I'm not fit for this. She breathed out, struggling to confess. I leaned forward, putting my hands on hers. I think this change of heart would prove otherwise, Celeste. She tilted her head and gave me a sad smile. All the same, I don't think he wants me. Even if he did, she added, pulling her hands from mine to tidy up her eye makeup, someone recently reminded me that I don't need a man to get what I want out of life. We shared a grin before she turned back to Elise. I can never begin to apologize for everything I've done to you, but I need you to know how sincerely I regret it. I'm sorry, Elise. Elise didn't waver, staring Celeste down. I braced myself for her vicious words now that Celeste was finally at her mercy. I could tell him. America and Chris would be my witnesses, and Maxim would have to send you home. Celeste swallowed. How humiliating it would be to leave like that. I won't, though, Elise said finally. I would never force Maxon's hand, and win or lose, I want to do it with integrity. So let's move forward. It wasn't an actual statement of forgiveness, but it was above and beyond what Celeste was expecting. It was all she could do to keep herself together as she nodded and whispered her thanks to Elise. Wow, Chris said, attempting to change the subject. I mean, I didn't want to tell on you either, Celeste, but I didn't think about honor being behind that choice. Chris turned to Elise, thinking over the words. It's always on my mind, Elise confessed. I have to hold on to it however I can, especially since I'll be an embarrassment to my family if I don't win. How is it your fault if he's the one doing the choosing? Chris asked, shifting her weight and settling back in. How would that make you an embarrassment? Elise turned in more, moving from one worry to another. Because of the arranged marriage thing. The best girls get the best men and vice versa. Maxon is the height of perfection. If I lose, it means that I wasn't good enough. My family won't think about the feelings behind his choice, which is what I'm sure he'll judge by. They'll look at it logically. My breeding, my talents. I was raised to be worthy of the best. So if I'm not, then who will have me when I leave? I'd thought about how my life would change if I won or lost a million times, but I'd never considered what it would mean for the others. After everything with Celeste, I really should have. Chris put a hand on Elise's. Almost all the girls who went home are already engaged to wonderful men. To be a part of the selection at all makes you a prize. And you made it to the top four of the elite at the very least. Trust me, Elise, guys will be lined up around the block for you. Elise smiled. I don't need a line. I just need one. Well, I need a line, Celeste said, making us all chuckle, even Elise. I'd like a handful, Chris said. A line does sound overwhelming. They looked at me. One. You're nuts, Celeste decided. We talked for a while about Maxon, about home, about our hopes. We'd never really spoken like this, without any kind of wall between us. Chris and I had been working on it, trying to be honest and upfront about the competition. But now that we could just talk about life, I could tell that our relationships would survive the palace. Elise was a surprise, but the fact that her perspective came from such a different place than mine made me think on a deeper level, opening me up. And the bombshell, Celeste. If someone had told me that the brunette in the heels who walked over so menacingly that first day in the airport would be the girl I was happiest to have settled next to me at this very moment, I would have laughed in their face. The thought was almost as unbelievable as the fact that I was still here, one of the last girls, and very heartbroken about how close I was to losing Maxon. As we spoke, I could see her being accepted by the others as fully as she was now by me. She even looked different, with the weight of her secrets cast off from her. Celeste had been raised to be a specific kind of pretty. That beauty depended on covering things up, shifting the light, and seeking to be perfect at all times. But there is a different kind of beauty that comes with humility and honesty, and she was glowing with it now. Maxon must have walked up very quietly, because I had no idea how long he had been standing at the door watching us. It was Elise who saw his figure on the edge of my room and stiffened first. Your Majesty, she said, bowing her head. We all looked over, sure we'd misheard her. Ladies? He nodded his head back at us. I didn't mean to interrupt. I think I just ruined something here. We looked at one another, and I felt sure I wasn't the only one thinking, "No, you made something really amazing." "Everything's fine," I said.
"Again, I'm sorry to intrude, but I need to speak to America, alone."
Celeste sighed and started moving, looking back to wink at me before she stood. Elise rose quickly, and Chris followed, giving my leg a little squeeze as she hopped off the bed. Elise gave Maxon a curtsy as she left, while Chris paused to straighten his lapel. Celeste walked up, as strong as I'd ever seen her, and whispered something into Maxon's ear. When she was done, he smiled.
"I don't think that will be necessary."
"Good." She left, closing the door behind her, and I stood to take whatever was coming. "What was that about?" I asked, nodding toward the door.
"Oh, Celeste was making it clear that if I hurt you, she'd make me cry," he said with a smile.
I laughed. "I've been on the receiving end of those nails, so be careful there."
"Yes, ma'am."
I took in a breath, letting my smile fade. "So?"
"So?"
"Are you going to do it?" Maxon grinned and shook his head.
"No. It was an intriguing thought for a moment, but I don't want to start over. I like my imperfect girls."
He shrugged, his face content.
"Besides, Father doesn't know about August or what the Northern Rebels' goals are or any of that. His solutions are short-sighted. Jumping ship now would be just that."
I sighed in relief. I'd hoped that Maxon cared about me enough not to let me go, but after sitting with the girls, I didn't want to see that happen to them either.
"Besides," he added, seeming pleased, "you should have seen the press."
"Why? What happened?" I begged, moving closer.
"They were impressed with you once again. I don't think even I quite understand the mood of the country right now. It's as if they know things could be different. The way he governs the country is the same way he governs me. He feels no one is capable of making the right decisions but him, so he forces his opinions on people. And after reading Gregory's diaries, it sounds like it's been that way for a while. But no one wants that anymore. People want a choice."
Maxon shook his head.
"You're terrifying to him, but he can't expel you. They adore you, America."
I swallowed. "Adore?" He nodded.
"And I feel similarly. So no matter what he says or does, don't lose faith. This isn't over."
I placed my fingers on my lips, shocked by the news. The selection would continue. The girls and I still had our chance. And based on Maxon's report, the people were approving of me more and more. But for all the good news, one thing was still pressing on me. I looked down at the blanket, almost afraid to ask. "I know this will sound stupid, but who's the French king's daughter?" Maxon was silent for a moment before he sat down on the bed.
"Her name is Daphne. Before the selection, she was the only girl I really knew."
"And?" He huffed out a soundless laugh.
"And a little late in the game, I discovered her feelings for me went a little bit deeper than friendship. But I didn't return those feelings. I couldn't."
"Was there something wrong with her, or?"
"America, no."
Maxon reached for my hand, forcing me to look at him.
"Daphne is my friend. That's all she ever could be. I spent my life waiting for you, for all of you. This was my chance to find a wife, and I've known that for as long as I can remember. Romantically, my interactions with Daphne were non-existent. I'd never have thought to mention her name to you, and I'm certain the only reason Father did was to give you yet another opportunity to doubt yourself."
I bit my lip. The king knew my weaknesses too well.
"I watch you do it, America. You compare yourself to my mother, to the other elite, to a version of yourself you think you ought to be. And now you're about to do the same thing with a person you didn't know existed until a few hours ago."
It was true. I was already wondering if she was prettier than me, smarter than me, and if she said Maxon's name with a ridiculously flirtatious accent.
"America,"
he said, cupping my face in his hand.
"If she had mattered, I would have told you. The same way you would with me."
My stomach turned. I hadn't been completely honest with Maxon. But with his eyes right there, staring so deeply into mine, it was easy to dismiss all that. I could forget about everything surrounding us when he looked at me like that. And so, I did. I fell into Maxon's arms, holding him tightly. There was no place in the world I wanted to be more. Chapter 21. Celeste had become the champion of our newfound sisterhood. It was her idea to drag all our maids and a bunch of big mirrors down to the women's room and essentially spend the day making one another over. There wasn't much point, seeing as there was no way any of us could do a better job than the palace staff, but it was fun all the same. Chris held the ends of my hair across my forehead. "Have you ever considered getting bangs?" "A couple of times," I admitted, fluffing the fringe hanging just above my eyes. "But my sister usually ends up annoyed with hers, so I change my mind." "I think you'd look cute," Chris said enthusiastically. "I cut some for my cousin once. I could do yours if you want." "Yeah," Celeste chimed in. "Let her near your face with scissors, America. Great idea." We all burst into laughter. I even noticed a tiny giggle from the other end of the room. I glanced over to see the queen pursing her lips together tightly as she attempted to read the file in front of her. I was worried she'd find all this a bit improper, but honestly, I wasn't sure I'd ever seen her so happy. "We should take pictures," Elise said. "Anyone got a camera?" Celeste asked. "I'm a pro at this." "Maxon does," Chris shouted. "Come here for a minute," she said to a maid, waving her over encouragingly. "Hold on," I said, grabbing some paper. "Okay, okay. Your highest of highnesses, the ladies of the elite require immediately the least fancy of your cameras for..." Chris giggled, and Celeste shook her head. "Oh, a study in feminine diplomacy," Elise added. "Is that a real thing?" Chris asked. Celeste tossed her hair. "Who cares?" Maybe 20 minutes later, Maxon knocked on the door and pushed it open an inch.
"Can I come in?"
Chris ran over. "No, we just want the camera." And she snatched it from his hand and closed the door in his face. Celeste fell on the floor laughing.
"What are you doing in there?"
he called, but we were all too busy doubling over to answer. There were lots of poses behind the shrubs and 1,000 kisses blown, and Celeste showed us all how to find the light. As Chris and Elise lay down on the couch, and Celeste climbed above them to snap more photos, I looked over and saw the satisfied smile on the queen's face. It felt wrong that she wasn't a part of this. I snatched up one of the brushes and walked over to her. "Hello, Lady America," she greeted. "Could I brush your hair?" Several emotions played across her face, but she only nodded and spoke quietly. "Of course." I walked behind her and picked up a handful of her absolutely gorgeous hair. I raked the brush down again and again, watching the other girls as I did so. "It does my heart good to see you all getting along," she commented. "Me too. I like them." I was quiet for a while. "I'm sorry about the convicting. I know I shouldn't have done that. I know, dear. You explained it all beforehand. It's a difficult task, and you did seem to have a sickly bunch." I realized then how out of the loop she was. Or maybe she simply chose to believe the best about her husband at all costs. As if she could read my thoughts, she spoke. "I know you think Clarkson's harsh, but he's a good man. You have no idea how stressful it is to be in his shoes. We all deal with it in our own ways. He has a temper sometimes. I need lots of rest. Maxon jokes it off." "He does, doesn't he?" I said, laughing. "The question is, how would you handle it?" She turned her head. "I think your passion is one of your best features. If you could learn to control it, you could be a wonderful princess." I nodded. "I'm sorry I let you down." "No, no, dear," she said, turning forward. "I see potential in you. I worked in a factory when I was your age. I was dirty and hungry, and sometimes I was angry. But I had an undying crush on the Prince of Ilia, and when I got the chance to make him my own, I learned to check those feelings. There's a lot to be done from here, but it might not happen the way you want it to. You need to learn to accept that, okay?" "Yes, Mom," I joked. She looked back at me, her face like stone. "I mean, ma'am. Ma'am." Her eyes started glistening and she blinked a few times, turning forward again. If it ends as I suspect it will, Mom will be just fine. And then it was my turn to blink back the tears. It wasn't like I was ever going to replace my mother, but it felt special to be accepted with all my flaws by the mother of the person I might marry. Celeste turned and saw us and she ran over. You're so cute, smile. I leaned down, wrapping my arms around Queen Amberlee, and she reached up to touch my hands. After that, we all took turns crowding around her, getting her to finally make one silly face for the camera. The maids helped take pictures so we could all be in some together, and by the end of it, I could easily say that was my best day in the palace. I didn't know if that would hold, though. Christmas was right around the corner. My maids were fixing my hair after Elise's last terrible attempt at an updo when there was a knock on the door. Mary rushed to answer it, and a guard whose name I didn't know came into the room. I'd seen him around a lot, almost exclusively at the king's side. My maids curtsied as he walked closer, and I was more than a little anxious when he stopped in front of me.
"Lady America, the king requires your presence at once," he said coolly.
"Is anything wrong?" I asked, stalling.
"The king will answer your questions."
I swallowed. Every awful thing ran through my head. My family was in danger. The king had found a way to punish me quietly for all the ways I'd wronged him. He'd discovered we'd sneaked out of the palace. Or perhaps worst of all, someone had figured out my connection to Aspen, and we were both about to pay for it. I tried to shake the fear out of my system. I didn't want any of it to show in front of King Clarkson. "I'll follow you then." I stood and started walking behind the guard, giving one last glance to the girls as I left. When I saw the worry on their faces, I wished I hadn't. We went down the hall and started up the stairs to the third floor. I didn't quite know what to do with my hands, and I kept touching my hair or my dress or lacing my fingers together. When we were about halfway down the hall, I saw Maxon, and that helped. He paused just outside a room, waiting for me. There was no concern in his eyes, but he was better at hiding his fear than I was. "What's this about?" I whispered.
"Your guess is as good as mine."
The guard took his place outside the door as Maxon escorted me inside. In the wide room, there were shelves of books along one wall. On easels, several maps were set up. There were at least three separate ones of Ilia, with markers in different colors. At a wide desk, the king sat with a piece of paper in his hand. As he noticed Maxon and me enter the room, the king straightened.
"What exactly have you done with the Italian princess?" King Clarkson demanded, staring at me.
I froze. The money. I'd forgotten all about that. Conspiring to sell weapons to people he viewed as enemies was worse than any of the other scenarios for which I'd been preparing. "I'm not sure what you mean," I lied, looking to Maxon. Even though he knew everything, he remained calm.
"We have been trying to make an alliance with the Italians for decades, and all of a sudden the royal family is quite interested in having us visit. However..."
The king picked up the letters, searching for a specific section.
"Ah, here. While it would be more than an honor to have your majesty and your family grace us with your company, we hope that Lady America will also be able to visit with you. After meeting all the elite, we can't imagine anyone following in the queen's footsteps quite like her."
The king raised his eyes back to me.
"What have you done?"
Realizing I'd dodged something huge, I relaxed marginally. "All I've done was try to be polite toward the princess and her mother when they visited. I didn't know she liked me so much." King Clarkson rolled his eyes.
"You're subversive. I've been watching you, and you're here for something. And it sure as hell isn't him."
Maxon turned to me at those words. I wished I hadn't seen the flicker of doubt in his eyes. I shook my head. "That's not true."
"Then how did a girl of no means, no connections, and no power manage to get this country within the reach of something it's been trying to achieve for years? How?"
In my heart, I knew that there were factors here that he was oblivious to. But it was Nicoletta who had offered assistance to me, who had asked if she could do anything for a cause she wanted to support. If he'd accused me of something that was actually my fault, his rising voice would have been frightening. As it was, he came across like a child. In response, I spoke quietly. You were the ones who assigned us to entertain your foreign guests. I never would have met any of those women otherwise. And she's the one who wrote inviting me to come. I didn't beg for a trip to Italy. Maybe if you were simply more welcoming, you'd have had your alliance with Italy years ago. He stood forcefully.
Watch your mouth.
Maxon put an arm around me.
Perhaps it's best you left America.
I happily started moving, keen to be anywhere the king wasn't. But that was not what King Clarkson had in mind.
Stop. I have more, he insisted. This changes things. We can't reset the selection and risk upsetting the Italians. They have a lot of influence. If we can get them, they'll open a lot of doors for us.
Maxon nodded, not upset at all. He had already made the choice to keep us here, but we had to play along and let the king think he was in control.
We'll simply have to draw out the selection, he concluded.
My heart plummeted.
We have to give the Italians time to accept the other options as viable without offending them. Perhaps we should schedule a trip over there soon. Give everyone an opportunity to shine.
He looked so pleased with himself, so proud of his solution. I wondered how far he would go. Prep Celeste, maybe. Or arrange for some private time with Chris and Nicoletta. I wouldn't put it past him to make me look bad deliberately, the way he had tried to in the convicting. If he went to all the lengths he could without openly incriminating himself, I wasn't sure I had much of a chance. And forget the political side of it. More time meant more opportunities to embarrass myself.
Father, I'm not sure that would help,
Maxon interjected.
The Italian ladies have already met all the candidates. If they're showing a preference for America, it must have come from something they like in her that wasn't visible in the others. You can't simply make that exist.
The king looked at Maxon, venom in his eyes.
Are you declaring your choice right now, then? Is the selection over?
My pulse stopped altogether.
No,
Maxon answered, as if the very thought was ridiculous.
I'm just not sure what you're suggesting is the right course.
King Clarkson propped his chin on his hand, looking back and forth between Maxon and me, staring at us like some equation he couldn't solve.
She has yet to prove herself trustworthy. Until that time, you cannot choose her.
The king's face was unyielding.
And how do you suggest she does that?
Maxon countered.
What exactly do you need in order to be satisfied?
The king raised his eyebrows, seeming amused at his son's questions. After a moment of consideration, he pulled a small file out of his drawer.
Even excluding your recent stunt on the report, there seems to be a bit of unrest these days between the castes. I've been wanting to find a way to aid in soothing the opinions of the moment, but it occurred to me that someone as fresh and young, and dare I say popular as you are, might do better at this than I would.
Pushing the file across the desk, he continued.
It seems the people follow your tunes. Perhaps you would sing one of mine for them.
I opened the folder and read the papers. What is this?
Just some service announcements we'll be making soon. We know, of course, the caste makeup of each province and all the communities within them, so we'll be sending specific ones to certain areas, encouraging them. What is it, America?
Maxon asked, confused by his father's words. They're like commercials, I answered. Advertisements to be happy with your own caste, not to associate closely with those outside it.
Father, what's this about?
The king leaned back in his chair, relaxing.
It's nothing serious. I'm merely trying to quell the unrest. If I don't do it, you'll have an uprising on your hands by the time I pass down the crown. How so? The lower castes tend to get unruly from time to time. It's natural. But we have to subdue the anger and squash the ideas of usurping power quickly before they unite and undo our great nation.
Maxon stared at his father, still not fully comprehending his words. If Aspen hadn't clued me in to sympathizers, I might have been the same way. The king was planning to divide and conquer, make the castes absurdly grateful for what they had, even if they were being treated like they didn't matter, and tell them not to associate with those outside of their castes, for they certainly wouldn't understand the plight of anyone outside their own. This is propaganda, I spat, remembering the word from Dad's tattered history book. The king tried to soothe me.
No, no. It's a suggestion. It's reinforcement. It's a way of looking at the world that will keep our country happy.
Happy? So you want me to tell some seven that... I hunted for the words on the sheet. Your task is possibly the greatest of our nation? You toil with your body and build the very roads and buildings that make our land? I searched for more. No two or three could equal your talent, so turn your eyes away from them on the street. No need to speak with those who may rank higher than you by caste, but are beneath you in your contribution. Maxon turned from me to his father.
Surely that will alienate our people. On the contrary, it will help settle them into their places and make them feel that the palace has their best interests at heart.
Do you? I shot.
Of course I do,
the king yelled. His outburst made me take a few steps back.
People need to be led by the bit, with blinders on like horses. If you do not guide their steps, they run astray, straight into what's worst for them. You may not like these little speeches, but they'll do more, save more than you know.
My heart was still slowing as he finished speaking, and I stood silently with the papers in my hands. I knew he was worried. Every time he got a report of something happening beyond his control, he crushed it. He lumped all change together, calling it treason before inspecting it. His answer this time was to have me do what Gregory did and isolate his people. I can't say it, I whispered. He responded calmly.
Then you cannot marry my son. Father!
King Clarkson held up a hand.
We're at that point, Maxon. I've let you have your way, and now we must negotiate. If you want this girl to stay, then she must be obedient. If she cannot follow through with the simplest of tasks, my only conclusion is that she doesn't love you. If that's the case, I can't see why you would want her in the first place.
I locked eyes with the king, hating him for putting the thought in Maxon's head.
Do you? Do you love him at all?
This wasn't how I was going to say it. Not at the end of an ultimatum. Not for business. The king tilted his head.
How sad, Maxon. She needs to think about it.
Do not cry. Do not cry.
I'll give you some time to find out where you stand. If you won't do this, then rules be damned. I'll be kicking you out by Christmas Day. What a special gift that will be for your parents.
3 days. He smiled. I set the folder on his desk and left, trying not to break into a run. All I needed was another excuse for him to say I was flawed.
America!
Maxon yelled.
Stop!
I kept walking until he grabbed me by the wrist, forcing me to pause.
What the hell was that?
He demanded. He's insane! I was on the verge of tears, but I held them in. If the king came out and saw me that way, I'd never live it down. Maxon shook his head.
Not him, you. Why didn't you agree to do it?
I looked at him gobsmacked. It's a trick, Maxon. Everything he's doing is a trick.
If you had said yes, I would have ended this now.
Incredulous, I fired back. 2 seconds before, you had the chance to end it and didn't. How is this my fault?
Because, he answered, his whole demeanor urgent, you are denying me your love. It's the only thing I've wanted in this entire competition, and you still hold back. I keep waiting for you to say it, and you won't. If you couldn't say it out loud in front of him, fine. But if you had simply agreed, that would have been good enough for me.
And why would I? When, for as far as we've come, he could still push me out. While I'm humiliated over and over again, and you stand by. That's not love, Maxon. You don't even know what love is.
The hell I don't. Do you have any idea what I've been through?
Maxon, you were the one who said you wanted to stop arguing. So stop giving me reasons to argue with you. I stormed away. What was I still doing here? I kept torturing myself for someone who had no idea what it meant to be faithful to one person. And he never would, because his whole concept of romance revolved around the selection. He wouldn't ever understand. As I was about to hit the stairwell, I was whipped back again. Maxon held me tightly, both of his hands gripping my arms. Surely he could see how furious I was, but in the seconds that had passed, his demeanor had shifted completely.
"I'm not him," he said.
"What?" I demanded, trying to free myself.
"America, stop."
I huffed and quit struggling. Without any other options, I looked into Maxon's eyes.
"I'm not him, all right?"
"I don't know what you mean." He sighed.
"I know that you spent years pouring yourself into another person who you thought was going to love you forever, and when he was faced with the realities of the world, he abandoned you."
I froze, taking in his words.
"I'm not him, America. I have no intentions of giving up on you."
I shook my head. "You can't see it, Maxon. He might have let me down, but at least I knew him. After all this time, I still feel like there's a gap between us. The selection has forced you to hand over your affection in slices. I'll never really have all of you. None of us will." When I shrugged myself free this time, he didn't fight me. Chapter 22. I didn't remember much of the report. I sat on my pedestal, thinking as every second passed that I was that much closer to being sent home. Then it dawned on me that staying wasn't much better. If I caved and read those horrible messages, the king would win. Maybe Maxon did love me, but if he wasn't man enough to say it out loud, then how could he ever protect me from the most frightening thing in my life, his father? I would always be bending to King Clarkson's will, and for all the support Maxon had from the northern rebels, behind these walls, he would be alone. I was angry at Maxon, and I was angry at his father, and I was angry at the selection and everything that came with it. All the frustration knotted itself around my heart to the point where it made no sense, and I wished more than anything that I could talk to the girls about what was going on. That wasn't possible, though. It wouldn't make anything better for me, and it would only make things worse for them. Sooner or later, I'd have to face my concerns by myself. I peeked to my left, looking down the row of the elite. I realized that whoever stayed would have to face this without the rest of us. The pressures the public would set on us, demanding to be a part of our lives, as well as the commands of the king, ever seeking to use anyone within reach as a tool in his plans, all on the shoulders of one girl. I tentatively reached out for Celeste's hand, fingers brushing against hers. The second she felt them, she took hold, looking into my eyes with concern. "What's wrong?" she mouthed. I shrugged, and so she just held my hand. After a minute, she seemed to get a little sad, too. While the men in suits prattled on, she stretched out, reaching for Chris's hand. Chris didn't question it, and it took her only seconds to extend her hand for Elise's. And there we were, in the background of it all, holding on to one another. The perfectionist, the sweetheart, the diva, and me. I spent the next morning in the women's room being as obedient as I could. Several of the extended family members were in town, ready to spend Christmas Day in style. Tonight, there was supposed to be a magnificent dinner and carol singing. Typically, Christmas Eve was one of my favorite times of the year, but I felt too unsettled to even get excited. There was a fantastic meal that I didn't taste, and beautiful gifts from the public that I barely saw. I was crushed. As the relatives started getting tipsy on eggnog, I slipped away, not up to pretending to be jolly. By the end of the night, I'd either have to agree to do King Clarkson's ridiculous commercials or let him send me home. I needed to think. Back in my room, I sent my maids away and sat at my table, considering. I didn't want to do this. I didn't want to tell the people to be satisfied with what they had, even if it was nothing. I didn't want to discourage people from helping one another. I didn't want to eliminate the possibility of more, to be the face and voice of a campaign that said, "Be still, let the king run your life. That's the best you can hope for." But didn't I love Maxon? A second later, a knock came at the door. I reluctantly went to answer it, dreading King Clarkson's cold eyes as he followed through on his ultimatum. I opened the door to Maxon. He stood there wordlessly. and all my anger made sense. I wanted everything from him and everything for him, because I wanted every piece of him. It was infuriating that everyone had to have their hands on this, the girls, his parents, even Aspen. So many conditions and opinions and obligations surrounded us, and I hated Maxon because they came with him. And I loved him even so. I was about to agree to do those awful announcements when he quietly held out his hand.
Come with me.
Okay. I closed the door behind me and followed Maxon down the hall.
You have a point,
he started.
I am afraid to show all of you every piece of me. You get some, Chris gets others, and so on. And I've based that on what feels appropriate for each of you. With you, I always like coming to you, to your room. It's as if I'm stepping into a bit of your world, and if I do that enough, I can get all of you. Does that make sense?
Kind of, I said as we turned up the stairs.
But that's not really fair or even accurate. You explained to me once that these are our rooms, not yours. Anyway, I thought it was time I show you another piece of my world, maybe the last one where you're concerned.
Oh? He nodded as we stopped in front of a door.
My room.
Really?
Only Chris has seen it, and that was a bit of an impulse. I'm not unhappy I showed her, but I feel as if it pushed things forward quickly. You know how private I can be.
I do. He wrapped his fingers around the handle.
I've wanted to share this with you, and I think it's well past the time. It's not exactly something special, but it's mine. So I don't know, I just want you to see it.
Okay. I could tell he was feeling bashful, like maybe he'd built it up to be a bigger deal than it was, or maybe he'd regret showing me at all. He took a deep breath and opened the door, letting me walk in first. It was huge. The paneling was dark, some wood I wasn't familiar with lining the whole space. On the far wall, a wide fireplace stood, waiting to be used. The whole thing must have been for show, since it never seemed to get cold enough here to justify a fire. His bathroom door was cracked open, and I could see a porcelain tub on the elaborately tiled floor. He had his own collection of books and a table near the fireplace that looked like it was intended for dining rather than work. I wondered how many lonely meals he'd had here. Near the doors that opened to his private balcony, a glass case full of guns sat, perfectly lined up. I'd forgotten his love of hunting. His bed, also made from a dark wood, was massive. I wanted to go and touch it, to see if it felt as good as it looked. Maxon, you could fit a football team in there, I teased.
Tried it once, not as comfortable as you'd think.
I turned to swat at him, glad to see him in a playful mood. It was then, looking past his smiling face, that I saw the pictures. I inhaled sharply, taking in the beautiful display behind him. On the wall by Maxon's door was a vast collage, wide enough to be wallpaper for my room back home. There didn't appear to be any sort of order to it, just image upon image piled up for him to enjoy. I could see photos that surely had to have been taken by him, because they were of the palace, which was where he was almost all the time. Close-ups of tapestries, shots of the ceiling he must have lain flat on the carpet to get, and so many pictures of the gardens. There were others, maybe of places he hoped to see or had at least visited. I saw an ocean so blue it didn't seem possible. There were a few bridges, and one of a wall-like structure that looked like it went on for miles. But above all this, I saw my face a dozen times over. There was the picture of me that was taken for my selection application, and the one of Maxon and me taken for the magazine when I wore that sash. We seemed happy there, as if it was all a game. I'd never seen that photo or the one from the article on Halloween. I remembered Maxon standing behind me while we looked at designs for my costume. While I'm staring at the sketch, Maxon's eyes are slightly turned toward me. Then there were the photos he took. One of me shocked when the King and Queen of Swendway visited, and he'd quickly yelled out, "Smile!" One of me sitting on the set for the report, laughing at Marley. He must have been hiding behind the blinding lights, stealing little images of us when we were all just being ourselves. And there was another one of me in the night, standing on my balcony and looking at the moon. The other girls were in them too, the remaining ones more than the others, but every once in a while I'd see Anna's eyes peek out from under a landscape, or Marley's smile hiding in a corner. And though they were just taken, pictures of Cress and Celeste posing in the women's room were up there too, next to Elise pretending to faint on a couch, and me with my arms wrapped around his mother. "Maxon," I breathed, "it's beautiful."
"You like it?"
"I'm in awe of it. How many of these did you take?"
"Nearly all of them, but ones like this,"
he said, pointing to one of the pictures used in the magazines,
"I asked for."
He pointed again.
"I took this one in the very southern part of Honduragua. I used to think it was interesting, but now it makes me sad."
The image was of some pipes spilling smoke into the sky.
"I used to look at the air, but now I remember how much I hated the smell of it. And people live in that all the time. I was so self-absorbed."
"Where is this?" I asked, pointing to the long brick wall.
"New Asia. It used to be to the north of what was the Chinese border. They called it the Great Wall. I hear it was once quite spectacular, but now it's mostly gone. It runs less than halfway through the middle of New Asia. That's how much they've expanded."
"Wow." Maxon put his hands behind his back.
"I was really hoping you would like it."
"I do, so much. I want you to make me one."
"You do?"
"Yes, or teach me to. I can't even tell you how often I wished I could catch snippets of my life and hold on to them like this. I have a few torn pictures of my family and the new one with my sister's baby, but that's all. I've never even thought of keeping a journal or writing things down. I feel like you make so much more sense now." This was the center of who he was. I could feel the things that were permanent, such as his constant confinement in the palace and the brief bits of traveling. But there were also elements that shifted. The girls and I were on the wall so much because we'd taken over his world. Even as we left, we weren't really gone. I stepped over and laced an arm behind his back. He did the same to me, and we stood there quietly for a minute, taking it all in. And then, something that should have been obvious the whole time suddenly came to me. "Maxon?"
"Yes?"
"If things were different and you weren't the prince, and you could pick what you did for a living, would this be it?" I pointed to the collage.
"Taking pictures, you mean?"
"Yes." He barely needed a second to think.
"Absolutely. For art or even just family portraits. I'd do advertising, pretty much whatever I could. I'm very passionate about it. I think you can see that, though."
"I can." I smiled, happy with this knowledge.
"Why do you ask?"
"It's just..." I moved to look at him. "You'd be a 5. Maxon slowly took in my words and he smiled quietly.
"That makes me happy."
"Me too." Suddenly, decisively, Maxon faced me, taking my hands in his.
"Say it, America, please. Tell me you love me, that you want to be mine alone."
"I can't be yours alone with all the other girls here."
"And I can't send them home until I'm sure of your feelings."
"And I can't give you what you want while I know that tomorrow you could be doing this with Cress."
"Doing what with Cress? She's already seen my room, I told you."
"Not that. Just pulling her away, making her feel like..." He waited.
"How?"
he whispered. "Like she's the only one who matters. She's crazy about you, she's told me so. And I don't think it's one-sided." He sighed, searching for the words.
"I can't tell you she means nothing. I can tell you that you mean more."
"How am I supposed to be sure of that if you can't send her home?" A devilish smirk came to his face. He moved his lips to my ear.
"I can think of a few other ways to show how you make me feel," he whispered.
I swallowed, both frightened and hopeful he'd say more. His body was now up against mine, his hand low on my back, holding me to him. The other hand pushed my hair off my neck. I trembled as he ran his open lips over a tiny patch of skin, his breath so very tempting. It was as if I forgot how to use my limbs. I couldn't hold on to him or think of how to move, but Maxon took care of that, backing me up a few steps so I was pressed against his collection of pictures.
"I want you, America,"
he murmured into my ear,
I want you to be mine alone, and I want to give you everything. His lips kissed their way across my cheek, stopping at the corner of my mouth. I want to give you things you didn't know you wanted. I want... He breathed into me, so desperately to... A loud knock came at the door. I was so lost in Maxon's touch and words and scent that the sound was jarring. We both turned toward the door, but Maxon quickly put his lips back on mine.
Don't move. I fully intend to finish this conversation.
He kissed me slowly, then pulled away. I stood there gasping for air. I told myself this was probably a bad idea, to let him kiss me into a confession. But, I reasoned, if there was ever a way to cave, this was it. He opened the door, shielding me from the visitor. I ran my hands through my hair, trying to pull myself together.
Sorry, Your Majesty, someone said. We're looking for Lady America, and her maid said she would be with you.
I wondered how my maids had guessed, but I was pleased they seemed so in tune with me. Maxon's brow furrowed as he looked toward me, and opened the door all the way to allow the guard to walk through. He came in, and his eyes had the air of inspecting me, like he was double-checking. Once he was satisfied, he leaned over Maxon's shoulder and whispered something. Maxon's shoulders slumped, and he brought his hand to his eyes, as if he was unable to deal with the news. "Are you all right?" I asked, not wanting him to suffer alone. He turned toward me, sympathy in his face.
I'm so sorry, America. I hate to be the one to tell you this. Your father has died.
I didn't quite understand the words for a minute, but no matter how I arranged them in my head, they all led to the same unthinkable conclusion. And then the room tilted, and Maxon's expression became urgent. The last thing I felt was Maxon's arms keeping me from hitting the floor.
Chapter 23.
Understand, she'll want to visit her family. If she does, it can only be for a day at the most. I don't approve of her, but the people are fond of her, not to mention the Italians. It would be very inconvenient if she died.
I opened my eyes. I was on my bed, but not under my covers. I saw out of the corner of my eye that Mary was in the room with me. The shouting voices were muted, and I realized that was because they were just outside my door.
That won't be enough. She loved her father dearly. She'll want time,
Maxon argued. I heard something like a fist hitting a wall, and Mary and I both jumped at the sound.
Fine, the king huffed. 4 days, that's it. What if she decides not to come back? Even though this wasn't rebel caused, she might want to stay. If she's dumb enough to want that, then good riddance. She was supposed to give me an answer about those announcements anyway. And if she's not willing, then she can stay home. She said she would. She told me earlier tonight.
Maxon lied. But he knew, didn't he?
About time. As soon as she returns, we'll get her in the studio. I want this done by the new year.
His tone was irritated, even as he got what he wanted. There was a pause before Maxon dared to speak.
I want to go with her. Like hell you will, King Clarkson yelled. We're down to 4, Father. That girl might be my wife. Am I supposed to send her alone? Yes. If she dies, it's one thing. If you die, it's a whole other issue. You're staying here.
I thought the fist hitting the wall this time was Maxon's.
I am not a commodity, and neither are they. I wish for once you would look at me and see a person.
The door opened quickly and Maxon came in.
I'm so sorry, he said, walking over and sitting on the bed. I didn't mean to wake you.
Is it real?
Yes, darling, he's gone.
He gently took my hand, looking pained.
There was a problem with his heart.
I sat up and threw myself into Maxon's arms. He held me tightly, letting me weep into his shoulder. Daddy, I cried. Daddy!
Hush, darling, it'll be all right, Maxon soothed. You'll fly out tomorrow morning to go pay your respects.
I didn't get to say goodbye. I didn't...
America, listen to me. Your father loved you. He was proud you'd done so well. He wouldn't hold this against you.
I nodded, knowing he was right. Practically everything my dad had told me since I'd come here
was about how proud he was.
"This is what you need to do, okay?"
he instructed, wiping tears off my cheeks.
"You need to sleep as best as you can. You'll fly out tomorrow and stay at home for 4 days with your family. I wanted to get you more time, but Father is quite insistent."
"It's okay."
"Your maids are making an appropriate dress for the funeral, and they'll pack everything you need. You're going to have to take one of them with you and a few guards. Speaking of which," he said, standing to acknowledge the figure standing in the open door, "Officer Ledger, thank you for coming."
"Not at all, Your Majesty. I apologize for being out of uniform, sir."
Maxon reached out and shook Aspen's hand.
"Least of my concerns right now. I'm sure you know why you're here."
"I do."
Aspen turned to me.
"I'm very sorry for your loss, miss."
"Thank you," I mumbled.
"With the elevated rebel activity, we're all concerned about Lady America's safety,"
Maxon started.
"We've already had some local officers dispatched to her home and to the sites being used over the next few days. And there are still palace-trained guards there, of course. But with her actually in the house, I think we should send more."
"Absolutely, Your Majesty."
"And you're familiar with the area?"
"Very, sir."
"Good. You'll be heading up the team going with her. Pick whomever you like between 6 and 8 guards."
Aspen raised his eyebrows.
"I know," Maxon conceded. "We're stretched tight right now. But at least 3 of the palace guards we've sent to her house have already abandoned their posts. And I want her to be as safe as, if not safer than, she is here."
"I'll take care of it, sir."
"Excellent. There will also be a maid going with her. Watch her as well."
He turned to me.
"Do you know who you want to go?"
I shrugged, unable to think straight. Aspen spoke on my behalf.
"If I may, I know Anne is your head maid, but I remember Lucy getting along well with your sister and mother. Maybe it would be good for them to see a friendly face right now."
I nodded. "Lucy."
"Very good,"
Maxon said.
"Officer, you don't have much time. You'll be leaving after breakfast."
"I'll get to work, sir. See you in the morning, miss,"
Aspen said. I could tell he was having a hard time keeping his distance, and in that moment I wanted nothing more than for him to comfort me. Aspen really knew my dad, and I wanted someone who understood him like I did to miss him with me. Once Aspen left, Maxon came to sit with me again.
"One more thing before I go."
He reached for my hands, holding them tenderly.
"Sometimes when you're upset, you tend to be impulsive."
He looked at me, and I actually smiled a little at the accusing look in his eyes.
"Try to be sensible while you're away. I need you to take care of yourself."
I rubbed the back of his hands with my thumbs. "I will. I promise."
"Thank you."
A sense of peace encircled us the way it did sometimes. Even though my world would never be the same now, for that moment with Maxon holding me, the loss didn't ache so much. He leaned his head toward mine until our foreheads touched. I heard him draw in a breath, as if he might say something, and then change his mind. After a few seconds, he did it again. Finally, Maxon leaned back and shook his head and kissed my cheek.
"Stay safe."
Then he left me alone in my sadness. It was cold in Carolina, the humidity from the ocean coming inland and making the chill in the air damp. Secretly, I'd hoped for snow, but it didn't happen. I felt guilty for wanting anything at all. Christmas Day. I'd spent the last few weeks imagining it several different ways. I thought maybe I'd be here, eliminated and home. We'd all be around our tree, dejected that I wasn't a princess, but blissfully happy to be together. I'd also considered opening gifts under the massive tree at the palace, eating myself sick, and laughing with the other girls and Maxon. For one day, every corner of the competition suspended to celebrate. Never could I have imagined I'd be bracing myself for the task of putting my father in the ground. As the car pulled up to my street, I started to see the masses. Though people ought to be home with their families, they instead crowded outside in the cold. I realized they were hoping to catch a glimpse of me, and I felt a little sick. People pointed as we passed, and some local news crews took footage. The car stopped in front of my house, and the people waiting started cheering. I didn't understand. Didn't they know why I was here? I walked up the cracked sidewalk with Lucy by my side and six guards surrounding us. No chance was being taken. "Lady America," people called. "Can I have your autograph?" someone screamed, and others joined in. I kept moving, looking ahead. For once, I felt I could excuse myself from being theirs. I lifted my head to the lights hanging off the roof. Dad did that. Who was going to take them down? Aspen, at the head of my entourage, knocked on the front door and waited. Another guard came to answer, and he and Aspen spoke quickly before we were allowed inside. It was hard to get all of us down the hall, but once the space opened into the living room, I immediately felt something wrong. This wasn't home anymore. I told myself I was crazy. Of course this was home. It was just the unfamiliarity of how this was unfolding. Everyone was here, even Coda. But Dad was gone, so it was only natural that it wouldn't seem quite right. And Kenna was holding a baby who I'd never seen in real life before. I'd have to get used to that. And while Mom was in an apron and Jared was in his pajamas, I was dressed for dinner at the palace, hair up, sapphires on my ears, and layers of luxurious fabrics draping to my heeled shoes. It felt as if I wasn't welcome for a moment. But May hopped to her feet and ran to hug me, crying into my shoulder. I held her back. I remembered that this might be a strange adjustment, but this was the only place I could be right now. I had to be with my family. "America," Kenna said, standing with her child in her arms. "You look so beautiful." "Thanks," I muttered, embarrassed. She gave me a one-armed hug, and I peeked into the blankets at my sleeping niece. Astra's little face was serene as she slept, and every few seconds she'd unclench her tiny fist or fidget just a bit. She was breathtaking. Aspen cleared his throat.
"Mrs. Singer, I'm very sorry for your loss."
Mom gave him a tired smile. "Thank you."
"I'm sorry we're not here under better circumstances, but with Lady America home, we're going to have to be quite diligent about security," he said, a ring of authority in his voice. "We're going to have to ask everyone to stay in this house. I know it'll be tight, but it's only for a few days. And the guards have been provided an apartment nearby so we can rotate easily. We're going to try to be as out of the way as possible. James, Kenna, Coda, we're prepared to leave for your homes to pick up your necessities whenever you're ready to go. If you need some time to make a list, that's fine. We're on your schedule."
I smiled a little, happy to see Aspen this way. He'd grown so much.
"I can't stay away from my studio," Coda said. "I have deadlines. There are pieces due."
Aspen, still professional, answered him.
"Any materials you need can come to the studio here."
He pointed toward our converted garage.
"We'll make as many trips as necessary."
Coda crossed his arms and mumbled,
"That place is a dump."
"Fine,"
Aspen said firmly.
"The choice is yours. You can either work in the dump, or you can risk your life at your apartment."
The tension in the air was awkward and very unnecessary at the moment. I decided to break it. "May, you can sleep with me. Kenna and James can have your room." They nodded. "Lucy," I whispered, "I want you near us. You might have to sleep on the floor, but I want you close by." She stood a bit taller. "I wouldn't be anywhere else, miss."
"Where am I supposed to sleep?"